This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. You hear something interesting no matter when you tune to 91.7 or 88.5. And if you made a contribution to help support the station this year, we'd like to say thank you very much. If you haven't yet done it, we'd like to hear from you right now, 513-419-7155. You can also give online at wvxu.org or wmub.org. Sunday Baroque, created and hosted by Suzanne Bona, airs Sunday mornings on WVXU's sister station, WGUC, along with more than 100 other stations across the country. And each week it's a celebration of music from the Baroque period and the years leading up to it. Maybe you're a lover of Baroque music and maybe you've never heard of it, or maybe you have and you just aren't aware of it. Here to help explain Baroque music and why it may be more familiar than most realize is Sunday Baroque host Suzanne Bona and Cincinnati Public Radio Classical Music Director Jessica Lori. Suzanne and Jessica, thanks for being here this afternoon.
Thanks so much.
And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Suzanne, you trained in classical music originally, and you wanted to be a full-time performer at one point in your life, though. So how did you end up in radio? I bet that's a common question you get, too.
It is. I really veered off course in a sense, but in a way I really didn't. I was really fortunate. I grew up in a town in Fairfield, Connecticut, where I had wonderful musical training, and my parents saw my interest and my aptitude, and they got me private lessons on the flute, and it just sort of crystallized that that was going to be my career. It was going to be something with music, and I majored in music at the University of Connecticut and really thought I was on track to be an orchestral musician. And I veered off that track partly because, you know, it's a very, very difficult lifestyle. And
very competitive, isn't it?
Very competitive, yeah. But also because, you know, I was looking for the proverbial day job, if you will, and a friend sort of pointed me in the direction of my local public radio station. And all of a sudden, there I discovered this other thing that I was really passionate about and really loved. And, you know, I look at it as it kind of coming full circle because, you know, being on the radio is performing. It's just in a different way. And I've been really fortunate that I continue to play as a flutist as well as producing radio.
Yeah, you still find time. You manage to find time to perform, right?
Well, I do.
Tell me about some of the places you perform.
Well, you know, I've been really fortunate here in Cincinnati. I have connected with an incredible musician, and we play together quite a bit. It's Richard Goring. He's a terrific guitarist, multifaceted and multi-talented player. So he and I play together quite a bit. I've had the incredible good fortune to be able to collaborate with people like Sandra Rivers from CCM. My heart is fluttering just saying that. but so she and I have done some things for the radio station, actually. And I play with another marvelous musician who is the program director at a public radio station in West Lafayette. His name is Greg Kostraba, and he and I have a trio with another musician, a cellist who's in South Bend by the name of Josh Airy, and we have a trio called the Sylvan Trio. So we're going to be doing some music by Cincinnati composer Rick Soash in the next year or so.
You've got to meet some really cool people, haven't you?
I sure have.
Yo-Yo Ma, I think, is somebody you met.
Mm-hmm. And Yo-Yo Ma, I've met a few times. What a lovely, lovely, genuine man. Not only a brilliant musician, but a really, just a lovely, lovely person. And, you know, recently Andre Previn was in town for a big world premiere with Sharon Robinson and Jamie Laredo. And I had the incredible good fortune to spend some time with him on his trip to and from New York and also while he was in town. And what a legend. What an incredible opportunity that was.
Now, how did Sunday Baroque come to be?
Well, being a newbie, when I went into the radio station that very first time, I quite literally had never set foot in a radio station when I went for my first interview with the station that hired me. And I think at the time, you know, I was 24 years old and the program director was exhausted. He'd been working every day. He'd been on the air 7 days a week and was just dying to have somebody take over at least a little bit of the shift. So I was doing underwriting, believe it or not, corporate sponsorship. And he said on the weekends, all right, you come in at 7 o'clock on Sunday mornings and you can learn how to do radio. And he said, why don't you play Baroque music? I think he was afraid that a, you know, young, overly enthusiastic newbie might play some really crazy music that would not be very listenable or acceptable. I don't know what he thought. He probably figured I'd be a loose cannon. So he assigned me essentially to play Baroque music, and that was Sunday Baroque. That's how it started.
And now it's on, what, 166
stations? Yeah, about 166 stations. Mm-hmm.
Does that growth surprise you?
It does. It surprises me in a way only because when you look at the trajectory of classical radio stations in this country, you know, they've been sort of downsizing and downsizing. But I actually think that part of our ability to continue to sustain it is the fact that it is a produced show that stations can acquire, even if their own local resources are dwindling. They're able to acquire this show in a much more cost-effective way. So I suspect that that's probably at least part of the growth of Sunday Baroque.
You know, we keep tossing around the term Baroque, so Jessica, you can help us with this.
Sure.
What exactly is the Baroque period of music? What are we talking about here?
The Baroque period, it ranged really from about 1600 to 1750 in classical music history. We say that it ends in about 1750 because that's the year Johann Sebastian Bach died, and he was one of the central figures of the Baroque period, one of the composers. So historians typically say that 1750 was the year it ended because of that.
So it was a 150-year period.
Yes, that's
pretty,
approximately.
That's pretty amazing.
It is. It is.
Now, what does the word Baroque mean?
Baroque, basically, it is a French term that means abnormal or bizarre or exaggerated.
That's me.
Yes. It originated really in architecture or art of the time period, but it was also used for music. And really, both the architecture and the music really have a ornate style. Baroque music is very ornamented. Performers, typically composers, when they would write a piece of music, they wouldn't necessarily write all of the notes in the harmony that needed to be performed. So a huge aspect of Baroque music is that the performers would sort of improvise and fill in the gaps, if you will, with these extra ornamented notes, the same way we have ornamentation in architecture or art of the time period.
So was Baroque music pretty cutting edge for its time?
Yeah.
I would say so,
sure,
yeah.
Sure.
Okay, interesting. How does Baroque music compare to Baroque art, Jessica? I mean, there's an overlap there,
sure,
isn't there?
Sure, there definitely is an overlap. Baroque art, a great example, actually, of Baroque art is in the Taft Museum of Art here in Cincinnati. Many people might be familiar with that. They have a Rembrandt that's actually called Portrait of a Man Rising from His Chair. It's a very famous Rembrandt. And that is a great example of Baroque art. And it shows a lot of contrast between light and dark in the painting. It also shows motion, which was a huge thing for this time period, that because before this, in art, most things were like still life.
Exactly. And portraits and things
exactly.
Like that. Yeah.
Whereas this painting actually shows the man rising from a chair, moving. Similar to Baroque music, we see contrast. Instead of light and dark, we see contrast in tempo, such as slow versus fast. We might see an ensemble versus a soloist, you know, going back and forth performing in a concerto setting. We also see more of that forward motion, just like the man rising from the chair. So
this was pretty cutting-edge art, too.
Exactly.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation about Baroque music. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jessica, let's talk about who some of the major composers were during the Baroque period.
I would say top three composers, Johann Sebastian Bach, Vivaldi, and Handel.
Okay. We've got an example of Vivaldi's work, Autumn Concerto from Vivaldi's Four Seasons. Let's hear some of that. I know that.
Yeah, see? I knew you would say that.
That's beautiful. I know that. Well, tell me more about this particular piece of music.
Well, this was the Autumn Concerto from Vivaldi's Four Seasons. The Four Seasons, Vivaldi actually wrote one concerto for each season of the year, and each concerto is divided into three movements, and as I was saying before, there's that contrast between fast and slow. So the first movement is a fast tempo, like we just heard. The second is slower, and then it ends fast again. And Vivaldi actually wrote these sonnets that he connected with each concerto. So for autumn, spring, summer, winter, he actually wrote a sonnet describing that time of year so people could read that before performing.
Yeah, it seems like they have a repetition of a common theme. Is that typical of Baroque music? There's
yes.
a common theme throughout that they keep coming back
yes.
to?
Yes, yes.
And is it typically more lively music than most classical music? Or?
Well, it can be. I mean, it really just depends. In that, like Jessica said, there's a lot of contrast. So the second movement would be, you know, slower. Also, I mean, there was contrast right in that
That's
movement.
True. In fairness, we didn't hear the whole piece.
Loud yeah. and exactly. soft, you know, is another common contrast. So, you know, there's kind of that little echo. You know, there might be a theme and then it's repeated, but like an echo. So, yeah, I mean, I think it can be very lively. Vivaldi's music is sort of characteristically lively. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of very beautiful, slow and, you know, just sort of meltingly beautiful and uplifting things, too, that are Baroque.
Now, you mentioned Bach was the other uh-huh. major composer during that time, and we have the third movement of Bach's Brandenburg Concerto No. 6. So let's hear some of that. Okay, that one sounds familiar, too.
Yeah.
Where have I heard this before?
Well, if you listen to Prairie Home Companion, for example, right?
That's it.
It's that Minnesota Public
Radio theme
music.
Right.
Exactly. So you could be, you know, if you're a public radio hardcore, you could have been listening to this for years and not even necessarily know that that was from Bach's Brandenburg Concertos. Mm-hmm. Isn't that something?
That is amazing. Jessica, did you want to talk any more about this particular piece?
Sure. This concerto is one of six that Bach actually wrote and dedicated to the Margrave of Brandenburg, which is why they're called the Brandenburg Concertos. And it's interesting because this particular concerto actually highlights the violas, which wasn't really typical. Typically, the violins take up the melody. They're sort of the stars in a lot of music. So for viola players out there, they tend to like this particular piece.
How did you become so knowledgeable about classical music, Jessica?
I owe that to my teachers at CCM. I'm a graduate of CCM at the University of Cincinnati, and they taught me quite a lot.
Taught you very well,
yeah,
I would
say. She's a flutist. She's
I also, yes, like Suzanne, I play the flute.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's this piece. I'll let you two handle this one, okay. But we'll go ahead and we'll play a little bit of it, and then you can tell us about it. Now, I can't say that this one is as familiar as the other two.
Exactly. But isn't it cool?
It is cool.
It's
and
doesn't it sound,
that's Baroque.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't it sound modern? Doesn't it sound like something you'd go out to the club and hear or something?
Right.
Yeah. So
you know?
who is this and what's the piece?
Well, there's this whole other side of Baroque. Like Jessica talked about the sort of the bullseye composers like George Frederick Handel and Antonio Vivaldi and Johann Sebastian Bach. So there are all these really famous names. You know, many people have heard those names and certainly have heard a lot of their music, whether they even realize it or not. But their contemporaries were people like Spanish composer Santiago de Murcia or Gaspar Sanz or people in other European countries or in some cases even here in the United States. Well, it wasn't the United States, in the colonies, basically. There were these musicians who existed alongside of these big name composers. And a lot of them we don't really know. We don't know their music as well. But they were working in a lot of the same environment and they were using the same instruments and they were being influenced by sort of what was around them in art or architecture and whatnot, just like different languages maybe are related but are actually quite different. So, you know, this Spanish Baroque music or English Baroque music or Portuguese Baroque music, all of that just adds to the mix. And we chose those examples because it's really representative of what Sunday Baroque is about, which is sort of the familiar stuff that everyone loves and knows. And then the other side, the B-side, I guess, if you will, but not in a pejorative way, the other stuff that was going on at the same time because it's so rich and so different and so varied.
Jessica, did you want to comment on this particular?
Well, I agree. And something I wanted to add just in general was that Suzanne and I talked about this earlier, that you really don't have to know a lot about Baroque music in order to appreciate it. You can listen to a piece like this last piece we just heard and enjoy it and appreciate it without knowing that it was from the Baroque period or knowing anything about the composer. And I think that's important.
So people don't need to educate themselves to appreciate Baroque. This can be music that just enjoy and listen to.
Exactly.
I think any music can. You know, right. I think in some ways we sort of set up these artificial boundaries where it's like, well, this is a certain style or a certain genre and it's different and this genre is different from the other classical music genre. And, you know, my goodness, it's all subjective. And
right.
if you like it and it's pleasing and it's appealing and makes you want to sing along or whatever, what really... Do you have to know anything more than that? You know, we're sort of joking around, and I mentioned it in that Cincinnati Magazine article that, you know, you don't go out to a meal and say, well, you know, I don't know how to prepare this, so I don't really feel qualified to say whether I like
judgment,
this meal
right.
or not. You know, you go, wow. That's,
you don't have to be a chef to
appreciate
right,
exactly. This was delicious, or I'm probably not going to order that again, you know, or maybe not come back here. So I think it's, you know, we've sort of, in the classical music world, Baroque or otherwise, we've sort of worked ourselves up into a lather thinking, you know, you have to be knowledgeable, you have to have a degree, or training or something. And I just kind of feel like if you like it and it's pleasing, then what else do you have
it.
To
yeah,
know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I also had a question about the last piece that we just played. It, mm-hmm. it had some noticeable percussion in it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that typical for most Baroque, or is that kind of...
Not for most. I think you hear, in the Spanish Baroque, you'll hear a lot of that, and you'll also hear a lot of that in French Baroque, and they'll use some really interesting, fun, little, you know, exotic kinds of percussion instruments. Again, it's each style sort of has its own elements that are more typical. But there certainly is percussion. If you think about it, percussion instruments are some of the oldest instruments. You know, banging on something to make a noise was probably one of the first things we were able to do as humans,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so percussion itself is not a modern invention. It's actually quite old.
Now, is Baroque performed more by large orchestras or smaller groups, or is it a combination of things?
I would say typically smaller groups than what you see in the large, you know, concert halls of today. It wasn't until really the 19th century that we see orchestras growing in size. So typically, you know, either you would have a soloist or maybe a small chamber ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of surprised by how ubiquitous Baroque music can be. Mm-hmm. Was the movie Kramer versus Kramer, didn't mm-hmm. that incorporate a lot of Baroque music in the soundtrack?
Quite a bit of Vivaldi's music was just this running thread. And again, it had that kind of, you know, forward motion that Jessica talked about and that sort of drive. And that would, you know, if you think about what the theme of that movie was, you know, there's this sort of urgency and emotion and conflict, and it drove the music. We all know musical soundtracks of films are really important to creating the mood, the character, and really driving the story. And that is a really good example. But that was a 1979 film. I mean, it just, if you look up some of the movies, it's ubiquitous. It's unbelievable how much Baroque music is used in films and in also the famous GE light bulb commercial from I don't know how long ago with the Pachelbel Bell cannon.
Oh, right.
Right.
that was Baroque.
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
That is amazing how much of it is out there. And Jessica, there's a lot of this type of music that pops up, not just in movies, also on TV.
Right, right.
And people might not even realize it.
Yeah. I actually, in preparation for the show today, I was thinking, you know, I wonder how often Baroque music really does appear on television. And I hopped online and looked at IMDb, and they listed everything from Downton Abbey, The Simpsons, The X-Files, ER, all sorts
the
of shows.
X-Files.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Me. Okay. Wow. So it is indeed everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Suzanne, does Baroque appeal to a certain type of classical music listener? Maybe is it a younger audience, or?
It seems as though over the years, Sunday Baroque audience has tracked a little bit younger than sort of the general classical music audience. And it's almost negligible. It's small. But I think that it's also a very good entry point for people who didn't necessarily grow up in the classical tradition. There's a lot of familiarity about it in that it's harmonically sort of familiar to a lot of pop music. It's very balanced. It's very symmetrical in a way. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, you don't listen to it and think, gosh, where is this going? You know, you sort of have a sense of where you're going and what the journey entails. And I think that that is another reason that it is appealing to people who didn't necessarily grow up with classical music in their background. I love it. I haven't quite figured out how this is, but I cannot tell you how many times I've had young teenage boys, I kid you not, with like the heavy metal shirts on, come up to me at Sunday Baroque events and say, my two favorite kinds of music are, you know, heavy metal and Baroque. And I'm thinking, wow, I don't get this. I haven't figured it out yet. And of course, teenage boys are not really good about explaining themselves. So I haven't been able to get anyone to really articulate what that's about. But there is just some kind of a connection. I don't know. If anyone knows, I hope you'll tell me.
Is there, maybe we don't know about heavy metal, but is there a connection between Baroque and pop music of today?
Not so much pop music, but certainly jazz. Jazz is kind of like the contemporary version of Baroque music in some ways, in that there is a great deal of improvisation. Mm-hmm. It's expected as a jazz performer that you are going to, you know, take a solo, that you're going to fill in some of the little spaces in between. And that, again, as Jessica said before, it's very, very typical that a Baroque era performer would have been expected to do that. Take a solo, improv, do a little embellishment, and kind of go off the score.
Jessica, we mentioned Bach and Handel and Vivaldi. Who are a few of the other composers from that period?
I would say Henry Purcell, Telemann. Those are some of the big ones that stand out. Pachelbel, as Suzanne mentioned.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is there some place in town where people can hear Baroque performances?
Well, we're really fortunate. We have Cat Acoustic Consort, which is a local period instrument group. It's really like a consortium in a way. Annalisa Papano is the artistic director, and she plays an instrument called a viola da gamba and some of its sort of cousins, offshoots of the instrument. And she has connections with people around the community and around the world, really, who are experts in performing some of these early instruments. And we're so fortunate to have them in town. In fact, the Cincinnati Early Music Festival is coming up in just a couple of weeks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yes, there are wonderful opportunities to hear Baroque music being played in very authentic terms. And also, Linton Music Series is going to be having an all-Baroque program with Michael Chertok featured coming up in a couple of months or so. I don't know the date off the top of my head.
Do you have any hopes and goals for Sunday Baroque, where it heads in the future?
You know, it's been so serendipitous along the way. And, you know, we've been just so fortunate to keep growing. And I just am so excited, again, when I hear new people tuning in and saying, I love that. I've never heard it before and I love it. And it can be something that, it could be something like the two pieces we played before, the Bach and the Vivaldi, that, you know, are so familiar that someone says, wow. And, you know, there's always someone hearing it for the first time. Always, 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 always. No matter how much we think we know it. So I guess I just hope that there are more people that, you know, kind of feel welcome and feel as though they can listen and not feel intimidated and not feel that they have to know something.
I think you've converted me. Suzanne and Jessica, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Suzanne Bona, host of Sunday Baroque, which airs Sunday mornings on 90.9 WGUC, and Cincinnati Public Radio Classical Music Director Jessica Lori. If you'd like to learn more about Sunday Baroque and Suzanne Bona, check out this month's edition of Cincinnati Magazine. There is a link to the article on our website, wvxu.org, along with a link to Sunday Baroque. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at wvxu.org. The producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Kevin Rawinski. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Science Friday next on 91.7 WVXU. The Super Bowl is fast approaching, and there's almost as much hype about the commercials as the game itself. On the next Cincinnati Edition, we'll check out this year's lineup of Super Bowl commercials. We'll also look back at WKRP in Cincinnati with the author of a comic book history of the still-popular TV show. And in Focus on Technology, the sounds inside your brain are helping doctors treat illnesses. That's Cincinnati Edition, Monday afternoon at 1 o'clock on 91.7 WVXU.